Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
There is an old belief that the universe is made of stories, not atoms. Dialogue Radio with Dr. Jeff is a show that's about the stories of the universe. Dr. Jeff asks us to engage in the storytelling process of Dialogue, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. In an era of going green, what do we make when we tell stories of healing the world and transforming ourselves? How do stories influence personal and social evolution? What does it mean to take a storytelling perspective on sustainability? Dr. Jeff offers stories of wisdom, healing, and transformation, and engages others to tell stories of what it means to be human and weavers of the fabric of the world, Gaia. Expect the provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic with Dr. Jeff. Get ready to expand the imagination, heal the heart, and inspire personal, social, and planetary evolution. Now, here's your host, Dr. Jeff Lineweaver.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. Jeff Lineweaver, and you are listening to Dialogue Radio on Transformation Talk Radio. Join us as we engage at one of the oldest acts known to humans, that of storytelling, where we sit together as a community and listen to the old myths, the old stories, as well as new stories and stories of epic reinvention. Every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern, on Dialogue Radio, we will have some of the most gifted storytellers, social entrepreneurs, change agents, speakers, authors, and others helping you make sustainability epic. And today, I am so proud to have Carolyn Gray here, who is a musicologist, jazz musician, sociocultural identity critic and change agent, here to discuss her work in the world and her role as a musician, educator, performer, and of course, storyteller. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I was having this conversation with a friend the other day, and we were talking about drumming, and he and I both play African drums, and I was talking about my interest in the tabla, which is an Indian drum. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, and I didn't really know this, and he was talking about how tabla was so different because it was just a performance drum, and how he feels so uncomfortable in the role of being a performer as drummer, because he's grown up in this world of African drumming, and he's gone to Africa to study in places like Mali, where the drummers dance for the dance, or the drummers drum for the dancers, and the dancers dance for the drummers, and they all dance for the earth, and they all dance for the community, and it's this reciprocal relationship that exists. And he says that it's the only place where he kind of, when he does drumming, it kind of brings him back to the, not only his own story of going to Africa and kind of re-experiencing culture and society in a very different way, but at how he just kind of feels there's this gap between, in kind of the Western world or this world of performance, music and story as performance versus something else. Yes. That there's kind of this chasm between performer and audience in the industrialized world. And this makes me think of you and your work. So what do you think of all of that?
Well, I'm not an expert on Indian music, but I know that it has, it can be, classical Indian music can be a very formal tradition. And I think that it's not just the Western or the industrialized world that falls victim to, if you will, to that particular distancing of the audience and the performer, and the role of participation and the participants in so many cultures are very limited in terms of what they can do. And I think if you're looking for a healthier, sustainable community, regardless of the style of music, the genre of music, you need to have people freely participating in song and dance. They may want to go to a concert and see a great master performer. That's fabulous. I do it all the time. But you got to find a way to participate in this that makes you feel a part of the process.
Mm-hmm. So in your work as a musicologist and ethnomusicologist, how do you, you know, what are the patterns that you've seen? How has this kind of informed your own life story?
It varies from culture to culture, and I really wouldn't identify myself as an ethnomusicologist per se, although I did study that fairly extensively. I'm really interested in the sociology of music as much. So I'm interested in music and society. I think it can be a pretty fine line between the two. But I just look at the various roles that music plays, say, within our society, the way that people participate. You have everything from celebrity culture, which we were talking about briefly a minute ago, to community chorales, preschool music programs, professional performing groups, all of the above. So you have the most, if you will, commercial performances, and you have the most informal or loosely organized performances that involve making no money versus things that make millions and millions of dollars for an industry that has sprung up around that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge span.
So to me, what really jumps out in this is how music is this kind of amplifier as much as a kind of a chisel for society and who we are and the story we're telling and the identities that we're making as a part of all of this. This kind of,
yes,
both our group narrative and our individual narrative. And so in this world where we're talking about dialogue, so I think of it as this ritual and conversational practice of re-inhabiting the earth, but it's kind of this re-inhabiting the earth piece that is so interesting, because I feel like music has always been a reminder of our connection. When I, for example, I have this rattle with me, so I'm sure everyone can hear that. It blows my mind. It is a rattle made with elk skin filled with stones, mm-hmm, and corn kernels, sewed up together with sinew on a wood handle with a leather strap. And to me, this is such a reminder of the living world. And there are great stories, particularly in kind of Norse mythology and others, where they talk about this this relationship with the world tree and the world animal and its connection to the music of life. And so it's like music to me is this, it's this reminder of dialogue. It's an essential instrument. So how do you kind of reflect on that notion in your work?
Well, that instrument the rattle you're describing, which sounds really beautiful, and also sounds like it's beautifully constructed, is a perfect example of an essential instrument. And a lot of people see the drum and the family of percussion instruments in general as being the original or the foundation of organized music, if you will. I think the voice came first, but I think it's the argument is moot, if you know what I mean, because they function beautifully together and they're both essential. So if you want to talk about the history of the drum in terms of human evolution and what that means in terms of communication in its broadest sense, it's huge. I'm not a percussionist by training. I did have an opportunity to study with a wonderful master drummer from Nigeria when I was in graduate school. And any suggestion that what he did was any less sophisticated than people who are studying Beethoven, Bach, Mozart, Shostakovich, etc., is nonsense as far as I'm concerned. Very sophisticated and elegant musician and extremely expressive and artistic. So it really depends on the musical culture that you're in, and it takes a certain amount of appreciation or knowledge or at least willingness to understand how that culture and society has shaped and formed the music that's being made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with that master, I mean, what was his view of kind of our Western world's relationship between song, dance, and, you know, music, dance, and storytelling? So, I mean, did he see it very differently?
There's a particular story that comes to mind, or a particular incident that comes to mind. I remember he went to see Alvin Ailey's dance company. He was an artist in residence at the University of Washington when I was in graduate school there. And this would have been the early 90s, I think, perhaps late 80s. And Alvin Ailey came through on tour, and he went to see them, and I was very impressed. But his comment was something to the effect that, you know, dance in this country is so much about jumping up into the air. Dance in Nigeria is so much more about being closer to the ground.
Wow.
And I thought that that was a really, I've never forgotten that. And I'm not paraphrasing it exactly, but the imagery that comes to mind, you know, you think of classical ballet, amazing leaps and an incredible level of artistry and athleticism. Then you think about African traditions of music where even in playing and studying jazz, the energy of the music, while it can be transcendent often, is very rooted in the earth. It's, mm-hmm. it's not a heady cerebral, experience. That's certainly a component of it, but it really, the whole notion of groove and rhythm and time is very much, I think, bound by our connection to the earth.
Well, let's, we're coming up against a break, but let's talk more about, let's pick up on that when we come back. You're listening to Gaglug Radio, with storyteller, musicologist, jazz musician Carolyn Gray. You're listening to Gaglug Radio with Dr. Jeff. We'll be right back. Tune in to Gaglug Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Gaglug Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Gaglug Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Some talk networks broadcast whatever they want to, whether the vibration is high or low. Others tune in to the highest vibration possible to help people live life full out. These networks don't come along very often. But when they do, they remind us that we can achieve everything that is possible. To help ourselves, to help others, and to help the planet.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sue London.
I'm Karen Hager.
I'm CJ Liu.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show, talk radio to thrive by. These networks aren't concerned about sensationalizing bad news.
They may hear something on the radio, and then all of a sudden, their whole day is ruined.
They aren't concerned about sensationalizing individuals' setbacks.
Powerful, inspiring.
They focus on an amazing, innovative broadcast network.
You can learn a lot.
That helps people rise up, that helps people become empowered.
Empowered Living Radio is where you can find it.
That helps people say yes to standing in the abundance and amazement that is their lives.
The urge to grow.
These networks remind us that everything is possible.
Let us inspire you.
That nothing is limited.
Epic social change.
That our lives are much more than anything our minds would hope us to believe.
Overcome those challenges in your life.
These networks help us rise and shine to the occasion of our lives.
True empowerment.
Transformation Talk Radio is one of these networks.
Transformative radio show that will change your life.
Won't you join us? Join us on Transformation Talk Radio.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life, too. Are you ready? visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
Hi, we're back on Guylog Radio with me, Dr. Jeff. And today, our guest is musician and storyteller, Carolyn Gray. And before we get started, Carolyn, if people want to get to know you and more about your work, where should they go online?
I have a website, www.carolyngray.com, and that's Gray, G-R-A-Y-E.
Okay, great. Thank you, Carolyn Gray. G-R-A-Y-E.com. Wonderful. Well, before we took our break, you had shared with us this quote from this Nigerian drummer of how in dance and Western culture we spend more time being focused on jumping up in the air versus being being more rooted in the earth. And I have to say that it really it was a big slap upside my head. You know, one of those blind spot moments. Not that I know that, but it's so on.
I know. It's like the whole idea of defying gravity, you know, is really maybe not what dance needs to be about, even though the people who do that are remarkable. There's no question.
Yeah.
But there's another way to approach it, which is sending your energy back to the earth, you know.
Well, I think there's something really well, it's like very masculine or very, you know, and very kind of feminine, meaning like when I think of up, I mean, obviously there's the joke with that, but it's in that kind of masculine way of, you know, in the agriculture kind of post-Gaian, you know, kind of in the, you know, after the original kind of horticulturalist kind of goddess-worshipping cultures, agriculture really rushed in this idea of up and better and edifice. And and it's very masculine, even the whole concept of air being one of the elements that are connected to the up. But the lowering of into the earth and being connected to the rhythm of the earth, it's so it is so feminine and so groove.
Well,
you know, you're talking about groove.
Definitely groove. If you're talking about jazz. And you're talking about the time that has to happen to make jazz work musically. That is, that's, in order for the music to become transcendent, all of that earthy time stuff has to be in place.
Well, you know, I often joke about this, but and many listeners don't know this, but I'm a former I used to play violin and classical music professionally and do a lot of classical singing, and I hit a wall, and I now joke and call myself a recovering classical musician. But but it's true. It was this world of hierarchy and competitive stuff that was just it was so far away. It was so masculine and aggressive, and very similar to the Olympics. You know, in terms of kind of the ethos and the and in terms of the, you know, the competitiveness, but. It was me actually getting a drum, starting to study a kind of African drum, and maybe it was because the drum sits at a kind of belly level or kind of root chakras or kind of center chakras, and it took me a good year to really get into feeling rhythm in my body in a whole new way, even though I'd been playing violin and singing since I was 6 years old. And it was this, this whole new eye-opener.
It's a much more personal experience that way. So at that point, it doesn't really matter what kind of music you're playing. What matters is that you are having the experience of the music being some extension of yourself. It doesn't mean that it doesn't happen with the violin or with classical piano, and I don't mean any, I don't mean in any way to diss artists who are accomplished, in any particular musical genre. But I think when you have that construct of a very hierarchical and competitive environment, it doesn't really connect us in as essential way as a musician. Or it certainly limits the opportunity to do that. There are some people, the best performers, transcend that. But again, they're usually on the stage and the rest of the audience quite a ways away. sitting, I might add. So, you know, yeah, if you want to participate in music, you've got to find a way that's much more egalitarian.
Yeah. Well, you know, I found that, you know, when I think of music as an amplifier of story or one's personal story, in my case, it was a big part of my own personal narrative. But it is with everyone in very different ways, of course. But it's bedrock, you know, and it's just interesting to me about the kind of personal and social identities and the social cultural worlds that exist that, again, are kind of amplifiers of these other things that are going on, these other value characteristics, and so competitiveness versus egalitarian. It's a very interesting mirror. You talked about how the best performers are those that transcend this chasm that's there between the audience and the performer. You know, I think of that a lot these days when it comes to, for example, storytelling, where oftentimes people think of storytelling as just this, you know, someone is going to, you know, either kind of act out a story or like a monologue or be like, and then the big blue sky went, you know, and very kind of library story time. But how have you seen this show up in your world of jazz? Because I think people think of it as it's so earthy and rooted and kind of adaptive, but you know, what have you seen in terms of the identities and stories that have come through the, you know, your point of view in your world of jazz?
Well, as a singer, you know, if you're dealing with lyric, you're either doing original material, and that obviously is true for instrumentalists as well. You're either doing material that you've written, or you're doing material that someone else has written, which means you're interpreting someone else's story, basically. But I think the idea, the notion of the natural voice or the honest voice or the authentic storytelling. I've had students in the past say, well, gee, if what I'm doing isn't authentic, does that mean that it's just been really fake and not honest? And I don't, that certainly wasn't the case, but I think that there's a level at which that maybe we aspire to where we really are telling our own story, regardless of the material that we use to do it. So if it's an original piece of work or an original song, that's great. If it's a song that someone else has written that we particularly resonate with, that works just as well. But we have to find a way to inhabit that lyric and that melody and present it in a way that is real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that question of, am I being authentic even though I'm quote doing somebody else's work? And I makes me think of when I was studying and doing a lot of high-end performance with classical music, it was about the ultimate replication and perfection of the music and how the person wrote it. And there was it was only through kind of a level of almost to, you know, except like OCD practicing, where you could kind of get to this level where you could find an interpretation, but it still was so tightly wound into kind of the DNA of that structure. It was
I think I can only in that tradition,
but it also reminds me of our culture these days where people get obsessed with having like perfect bodies or celebrity culture, because it was still so about the perfect, and people would diss you if you weren't. It's a very interesting question, this notion of finding one's voice.
I had a fantastic piano teacher in college, and she was great. She was so ahead of her time in so many ways. She was about 65 at that point, just about to retire. And I was working on something by Bach, and she came. I think I'd gotten into her studio a little earlier before my lesson. I was practicing. She walked in. She put her hands on her hip, and she said, "You know, you are never going to be a classical pianist, but you're very musical, and you have a wonderful sense of rhythm. Have you considered jazz?" And it was so great because at that point there were not that many jazz programs that were available at the college level. And there's a whole, now, you know, there's a whole argument about whether or not that has really served the music, and that's probably a conversation for another time. It's an interesting conversation for sure. But it was wonderful that she gave me the permission to really go, yeah, you know, I love this music and I love hearing it played beautifully, but I'm not feeling it on that level. I just am not, and I can't lie about it. Mm-hmm. And I certainly couldn't fool her, which was great, and she wasn't lying about it either. So, you know, I have always felt that I've always been so thankful to her for really, giving me the permission to follow my own inclination musically. And I grew up listening to jazz, so it made sense.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we need to take a break, but when we come back, let's talk more about this, you know, how one's voice is crafted, one's story, and in this case, through music. And I think that's a great, you know, I want to say more about that when we come back. So, I'm Dr. Jeff, and today our guest is storyteller, musician, jazz musician, Carolyn Gray, and you're listening to Guylog Radio. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Dr. Dane here from Access Consciousness. Are you a seeker, a dreamer, one of those people who's always known that there should be greater possibilities available but haven't yet been able to create it as your life? I'd like to help. Go to creatinggreaterpossibilities.com, where there's a free video and audio series created especially for you. Once again, creatinggreaterpossibilities.com. It's free, and it's designed to give you the actual tools that you need to create the life you've always been looking for. creatinggreaterpossibilities.com.
Tune in each Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern for the hit show Out of the Fog with Karen Hager, the Fog City Psychic. Spark your spirit and ignite your soul with spiritual conversation and enlightening guests that will help you get clear and catapult you into action. You'll meet metaphysical movers and shakers, intuitives, spiritual visionaries, and more. Want an on-air reading? Karen's down-to-earth style and lively curiosity delivers the compassionate, no-nonsense, intuitive advice that's become her trademark. Visit FogCityPsychic.com and book your reading today.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Pat. Did you know most coffee, not all, have hidden dangers lurking in it? A recent investigation into grocery store coffee revealed three dangers. First, modern coffee farming produces dangerously high acidity and caffeine. Second, mold content in grocery store coffee contains dangerous toxins. Yuck! Third, government agencies have found grocery store coffee containing 400 times the carcinogens allowed in drinking water. You will be relieved to know that Camano Island Coffee Roasters takes the worry out of your sip of coffee. Imagine how your coffee tastes without mold, carcinogens, or poison. Get your free coffee report, The 5 Hidden Dangers Lurking in Your Coffee Cup. Visit NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com to get your free copy now. That's NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com. And check out Camano Island Coffee Roasters.
Hi, we're back on Guylog Radio. I'm Dr. Jeff, and today's guest is Carolyn Gray. Carolyn can be found on the internets at www.carolyngray.com. That's GRAYE.com. All right. Well, before we went to break, we were talking about the role of music and crafting as an amplifier to our kind of personal social identities, our social worlds, who we become. And I was having a little bit of a confessional about being a recovering classical musician. And I know it sounds far-fetched to tell you all that having kind of this hitting the wall within classical world is akin to the perfection of people who want to have perfect beach bodies. But it did for me personally, it was a very interesting kind of window into the world of celebrity culture in terms of classical music. But it makes me think about a survey I saw recently that said that more millennials, that the thing that they want to be when they grow up is, the job they want to be, they just want to be famous.
Yeah.
And to be famous in the world is the aspiration. And I think that, I had this, a lot of performing as throughout my lifetime, but having to recreate myself after kind of hitting the wall and kind of the perfectionism of classical music, I think is what I was getting at, was a very interesting moment. And I see this in our world of even kind of high-end commercial music, pop music, country music, jazz music, where people's identities are kind of, they're commoditized, or people are kind of chasing after the brass ring of being famous. But what happens in the process of making that identity, that social world, and what happens in the crash, and how do we reinvent ourselves beyond wanting to be famous or infamous, even worse?
Yeah, which seems to, I know, and I think that we're seeing more and more of that too. I think the process that you described of becoming a classical musician, I did some of that, only not to the extent that you did, but it's very isolating. You spend a lot of hours. I've been thinking about the Olympic athletes lately too. They're so extraordinary. And the amount of time and work and effort that it takes to achieve that level of skill and then that level of success. So as a classical musician, you spend a lot of time alone. You really don't. You get coached, you go for a lesson, but the conservatory tradition is that you spend many, many hours in a practice room by yourself, and it's a small space typically, relatively small.
Yeah.
And it's not the most social experience, And it doesn't mean that you aren't communing with the spirits of the great composers, God love them, but it's not really, you're not really hanging with your peers at that point.
Yeah.
Unless you go out and play chamber music or play in an orchestra.
Yeah. It's interesting in that kind of tradition of classical music. I can tell you stories, though, where in kind of practice rooms, it'd be like these, hives of practice rooms where everyone would be practicing their stuff, that if somebody else was working on a piece that was close to yours, or you were in some type of competitive situation, oftentimes people would actually come practice outside your door to psych you out. Or people would cover up windows because they wouldn't want to be seen.
I was just going to ask you about that. If you had that, everybody would put a piece of notebook paper over the window, which is just about 8.5 by 11 in most practice rooms,
It's designed that way so
we could cover them up. I don't know.
It's like these hard-nosed, classical music bullies. And, but it was, and yet then it's kind of, again, then it's kind of exalted, and it's like this weird kind of like light shadow world that I think that, it's not exclusive to this. I think it is a part of the human experience. But you had mentioned, what is it, to live in a world of sustainability, music will be a part of the, music is Gaia, we know that with the stick and the stone and the wind, there's music everywhere. But, how do we use music to then, get at our own dialogue, our own rhythm within the world, our own story, our own way to reinvent ourselves, versus this kind of celebrity culture that has kind of two sides, where it reminds me of the sage on the stage culture that I see in sustainability, where everyone has the idea that will solve the magic pill, but as kind of a wisdom warrior.
I don't think it works that way. I think everybody has to figure out something in their own little sphere that imbues their work or their expression with a degree of honesty and authenticity and accessibility. So the thing I like about jazz so much, and I do see a lot of parallels, I have to say, between a lot of different musical genres. But jazz, as traditionally having been an oral form or an oral tradition, the socializing that went on around the learning and study of that music was so different than the conservatory tradition that you and I were just talking about. So I guess the question is, what can you sustain? Can you sustain hours and hours and hours of working alone in a practice room, going out, giving a concert, and then going back into the practice room or back into the studio, and then going back to give a concert? I mean, I feel that, for me, that is not the most, that doesn't feel terribly organic in terms of the way I want to communicate with people. And I will just say that I do see myself as kind of a reluctant performer in some ways, even though I've been doing it for ages. And I think that's part of why. I've thought about this for years, off and on. Some people live to be on stage. And they get on stage and they just pop and they excel at being the center of attention. And they're extraordinary and they're compelling and they pull you into their performance. I think that's a particular talent or gift in and of itself, regardless of what the art form is.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, there is this other side of, in our Western culture, this notion of, you know, a culture of narcissism and, and, you know, even grandma can be a narcissist. You know, it's like a great pop-up book for kids. Hey, grandma's a narcissist, a pop-up book, right? But, you know, I mean, it's out there and now I feel like I'm starting to sound really dark and, negative to everyone listening. I don't mean that. I guess what I'm trying to get at is, doing we sometimes is a really hard thing in our culture instead of just doing the I. And hearing you talk about this notion of an oral culture where you have it's implicit in an oral culture to be we, and you depend on kind of the group voice as much as individual voices within the group, versus in this world of perfectionism or celebrity culture or just competition. It's all about the I, because you're kind of, you're honing yourself, and so there's kind of a wrestling with that. And I just think about, how do we tell new stories that connect ourselves back to the planet that contribute to everyone's sense of egalitarianism, as well as not obliterating the self. We still want to be ourselves.
Yeah, of course. I think it gets back to that notion of collaboration versus cooperation. Where you have a community effort or you have a group effort. You can't learn jazz alone. You can't play it by yourself. You really have to get a rhythm section. You really have to experience what happens when bass drums and piano or guitar come together and lay that down if you're a singer or a horn player, performing on top of that. It's a really extraordinary experience. There's nothing else quite like it. And it's not something you can replicate by yourself. I can't, as a solo pianist, just make that happen. I can do other things as a solo pianist, but that I can't. And that's, that's the heart of the music. But it came about because people were interacting socially in a particular way and culturally in a particular way. So, that in itself is a complicated thing. It means, where are they? What were they experiencing? What was going on historically, what was going on in terms of gender, in terms of race, in terms of religion, what was happening politically, what was happening socioeconomically. It's all of that stuff that goes into, it impacts the kind of music that people make. And those become the stories that endure.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of
Get out your rattle, dude. That's what I
mean. All right, everybody at home, go get a rattle, put some beans in a jar, and cap it. It's all good. have a harmonic, you know, convergence of rhythm.
Yeah. I mean, it's that's the thing about musicology that I love, is that it gives you an opportunity to really, really break down everything that's going on. When you think about the socio-musical roles that go into a piece of music that you're listening to a recording or a live performance that you're watching, or you're listening to a score for a movie. You know, I was listening to your break music. It's kind of, I really like it. It's kind of a didgeridoo trance thing. There's some sort of electronic and a didgeridoo. Very cool.
Yeah, that's me.
And is it? Seriously?
No. But it's, it is cool. I really like it. It's an original piece.
Well, it's electronic, so you're using like a modern form of technology with a very ancient instrument. So that's very cool. You know, there's a lot of, if you look at both of those things, there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
And I think if people looked at music that way all the time, they'd lose interest very rapidly, because it's kind of a lot of work. But for me, as a lifelong musician, I think it's fascinating. I love to, and I know a lot of my fellow musicians think that it's kind of, you know, why would I want to break something down that we all take for granted? I mean, if you're a musician, you play music, you do this, you pick up whatever it is that you play, or you sit down to it and off you go. But socially, there's always more to the story.
Yeah, true. Yeah, there's, you know, always it's like the story told versus the story lived versus the unknowable or the untellable. Yeah.
And I wonder if it's possible to close the gap between the two. I don't know if that's even desirable always, but I think that even looking at them in that way is interesting. And then, before we get off track too far, although that's what I do, what can I say? The idea of that movie Shine that came out, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, something like that, in talking about classical music, I'm circling back to the notion of collaboration versus cooperation. There was a scene in that film, and I haven't seen it in ages, where two young boys were getting ready to perform as part of a piano competition, and one of them says to the other, well, you know, this is a blood sport. And I just thought, wow, if that doesn't really identify the entire psychology of what's going on there.
All right. Nothing like beer based music making.
Absolutely. Bring it on.
Well,
that'll be beautiful.
We got to bring on a break.
Okay.
So we'll come back and talk about the blood sport of classical piano. No, I'm just kidding. Well, all right. Well, you're listening to Guy Lug Radio, and today my guest is Carolyn Gray. We'll be right back.
Tune in to Guy Lug Radio with Dr. Jeff on TransformationTalkRadio.com as the stories of the universe are revealed in this engaging and creative hit show. Mondays at 1 Pacific Time, 4 Eastern, Dr. Jeff fills the airwaves with Guy Lug Radio, an epic conversation on self, society, and sustainability. Provocative, educational, transformative, and mythic, Guy Lug Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination, heals the heart, and inspires personal, social, and planetary evolution.
The root cause of disease is not what you think. Doctors are treating the symptoms, not the root cause, because they haven't been trained to do so. Dr. Alex Lloyd has developed a simple technique that has saved thousands of people from lives of frustrating and debilitating illnesses. This technique has been featured on national broadcast and cable television in People, Time, and USA Today. If you are ready to heal and tired of being treated, visit DrAlexHealingCodes.com, where you will find free life-changing information.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Connect with your personal guardian angels, guides, and departed loved ones at Angels and the Afterlife, an enlightening day of answers with Doreen Virtue and John Holland on September 22nd in Seattle, Washington. Audience readings will be given throughout the day, so reserve your seat today by calling 800-654-5126. Discover how guardian angels support, heal, and guide to enact positive life changes. Tune in and increase your innate intuitive abilities to receive signs and signals from the other side. Seats are limited for the Angels and the Afterlife event, so call 800-654-5126 to reserve your seat today, or online, visit hayhouse.com.
We're back on Guidelog Radio with me, Dr. Jeff, the host, and today we've had Carolyn Gray on with us, a jazz musician, educator, storyteller, and musicologist. So we were laughing about the blood sport of kind of in classical music before the break, and you were also, you know, actually breaking down the theme music to this show and just talking about all the different cultural elements and kind of expressions of our world that show up in music. And you know, thinking about this kind of this tension between being the performer or the, you know, performers as narcissists, performers as, you know, creative amplifiers, performers as storytellers, or kind of a collaborative view of all of these things. And what is, you know, what is a collaborative view of, you know, how is the story told through, you know, that lens? And so, you know, if somebody is interested in jazz, but, you know, how do they, you know, how would you invite them to, invite themselves to be kind of new participants in the music to kind of suss out all the stuff we've talked about today?
Well, I think a lot of that stuff happens without, you know, we've been talking about very process-oriented stuff. If you're interested in learning a style of music and expressing yourself accordingly, then it kind of demands a certain attentiveness or awareness of the things that we've been talking about. Do you see yourself as a performer? Do you see yourself as an educator? How do you identify yourself in relationship to this music? And that can always change. But the trick is, at least, if you really get engaged in a particular art form, like I have been in music, there comes a point where the music is more interesting than just about anything else. It's more interesting in and of itself in terms of its history, its tradition, the artists who have gone before to create it, than anything about ego. And again, there's a great movie that came out a few years ago called Icons Among Us, I think it's the present and future of jazz. Terrence Blanchard at that time was running the Monk Institute, very prestigious graduate program that had I think at that time it was at USC, and then it moved to Loyola in New Orleans. He's talking to his students and saying, you know, it's not about you, it's about the music. It's not about you, it's the music. And I remind myself and my students of that regularly, because it's so easy to get caught up in, oh, I don't sound good, oh, my voice doesn't feel good today, oh, I hit a wrong note, oh, I'm, you know, whatever, someone in the audience is looking at me weird. I mean, there are so many things that can be happening, but really what you want to is to immerse yourself in the experience of the music. If you can do that, everything else will, then your story is true. You know what I mean? That's the authentic story right there.
Well, it's funny. It reminds me of, my storytelling teacher, Danny Deerdorf, has always said, you know, that it's not about a, If you were telling a story and it's all about you, then you're not a storyteller. And and I think of that in terms of jazz, like the lyrics or the lead melodies, and how do all these things play, and what's the story that's going on there? And I think that's been really profound. And yet, you know, to have another movie reference, it also, in a very funny way, reminds me of the movie The Incredibles, where they would always get the bad guys off by having them go on they would start them on monologuing, and that for all the superheroes, they couldn't help but start talking about themselves.
Exactly.
And that would be like, it would be like they're kryptonite. And yet, I think it's interesting because it's this whole idea of, the superhero. And of course, we are all living in our own, we all have our own individual narrative. So we all individually, of course, have our own hero's journey, but collectively we have a collective, you know, as a species, we have a journey together as well. And, you know, what is it about, you know, monologuing in our real world that shows up in our musical world? And I think to kind of pick up on everything you've said and say yes and to that, I think that you know, we have listeners on this radio, on this radio show, and you know, and I think of being a listener in music as you know, there's a huge, you know, there is a conversation going on there. It's not just performing out, you know, even what we're doing right now, the act of talking and having a conversation, you know. You know, there are other listeners who are engaged that are equally a part of this story, and we're not really sure how that will kind of, you know, flow off and the afterlife of our conversation. But I think about that with music, and, you know, jazz in particular is this conversation of musicians, all together at once. And, you know, what happens, you know, what's the afterlife?
Yeah, yeah.
And how does it impact the listeners who are there in the room that kind of collapses that gap?
We don't know necessarily unless they make a point of expressing that down the road, but I always hold out hope that it will be something positive. I know that conversations like this, things that I've read, things that I've seen, things that I've heard have certainly had that impact on me over the years.
Yeah. Is there any, if there's any music that you would, kind of like one or two recommendations that you'd kind of throw out to the listeners, is something that they could kind of really, you know, groove into that might kind of, bring them back to this conversation, give them something to kind of reflect on as well as listen to the music and new ways of listening to that music? Anything come to mind?
Do you mean, are you talking about specific performers, I think, who really engage in the process that we're talking about?
Yeah.
There's a singer named Renee Marie, jazz singer who I think, and writer, and certainly a storyteller who I think is just remarkable. And, Renee Marie. And I think she keeps both names, lowercase, no capitals. She's remarkable. I've seen her live a couple times, and, I can't think of anybody who better incorporates the act of storytelling. Although I will say, you know, the old school entertainers had a tendency to be very comfortable with and excel in that tradition.
Huh.
And some people would say, well, they were doing shtick, and that may well be, but still there was a kind of a comfort and there was kind of a tradition of coming out and chatting with the audience, maybe telling a few jokes, connecting with people in a way, bringing them into your experience, and then taking them somewhere as a singer or a comedian. And Renee Marie is amazing. Ernestine Anderson did that in the past. Betty Carter used to do that. These are the great jazz, some of the great jazz singers. Certainly Billie Holiday did that. All of these singers have very different voices. Joe Williams, I'll throw in some guys, Billy Eckstein, Johnny Hartman, Mark Murphy, more recently Kurt Elling. I see all of these people as very, very connected in terms of jazz singing and the tradition of jazz singing, which has been so much about storytelling. And not to put any kind of cast aspersions to our instrumental friends, but I think lots of times instrumentalists forget that the story that they're telling is not all about them as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think jazz suffers. I mean, the jazz audience continues to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's something about inclusion versus exclusion that really people don't necessarily know why they're not interested in a piece of music, but they sure know whether or not they are.
Yeah. Yeah.
They have
true.
To know, you know. They just walk away. It's just that easy. So,
well, We will. We're going to have to leave it on that note, but I think it's a great note to end on. And Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure. It's always fun to talk with you, Jeff.
Well, I just want to thank Carolyn again, Carolyn Gray, for being our guest. You can reach her at www.carolyngraye.com. And I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Guidelog Radio. Guidelog Radio is the place where story seeds the imagination and inspires you towards personal, social, and planetary evolution.
Transformation, transformation, transformation talk radio. Transformation, transformation, transformation talk radio.
TransformationTalkRadio.com, transforming the world one listener at a time.
Stop. Get out of that car. Stop living your life in the passenger seat. Tune in to TransformationTalkRadio.com and let us help you drive.
You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio. Our hosts are setting a new standard for a fresh kind of talk radio, creating conversations that are transforming the world, one listener at a time. Transformation Talk Radio's mission is to broadcast a distinct blend of live talk radio interviews with a mix of uplifting and intelligent news, educational and practical information. Topics range from personal development to critical issues relevant to a rapidly changing world. Stay tuned. Transformation Talk Radio starts at the top of every hour.
Transform. TransformationTalkRadio.com. Transform your life.
Transformation Talk Radio showcases a distinct blend of live talk radio interviews with a mix of uplifting and intelligent news, education, and practical information. Topics range from personal development to critical issues relevant to a rapidly changing world. Our hosts bring together some of the planet's most preeminent and visionary change makers, best-selling authors, motivational speakers, leading-edge scientists and futurists, environmentalists and educators, world-renowned spiritual leaders, inventors, filmmakers, artists, mystics, and healers that are stimulating and supporting individual and collective growth. Get ready to create positive cultural shifts on Transformation Talk Radio. Join us in making a meaningful difference in the world. TransformationTalkRadio.com. That's TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, this is Dr. Pat. Did you know most coffee, not all, have hidden dangers lurking in it? A recent investigation into grocery store coffee revealed three dangers. First, modern coffee farming produces dangerously high acidity and caffeine. Second, mold content in grocery store coffee contains dangerous toxins. Yuck! Third, government agencies have found grocery store coffee containing 400 times the carcinogens allowed in drinking water. You will be relieved to know that Camano Island Coffee Roasters takes the worry out of your sip of coffee. Imagine how your coffee tastes without mold, carcinogens, or poison. Get your free coffee report, The 5 Hidden Dangers Lurking in Your Coffee Cup. Visit NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com to get your free copy now. That's NakedTruthAboutCoffee.com. And check out Camano Island Coffee Roasters.